This is Radio Freedom live stream celebrating 20 years since the Derby Rock House closed.
Here we go.
40 years of underground radio in Derby.
Come on.
This is Radio Freedom.
There is love in all to discover. Don't you ever wonder what you're really here for? Don't you ever wonder what you're really here for? What's it to you if I love you? What's it to you if I love you? Oh, oh. Oh, warm existence. Don't want not to be. Oh, want a consciousness. Don't want not to be free. All want loving. Don't want not to be loved. We've got to rid ourselves of fear and doubt and pain, insecurity. You see, our aimless use of energy. All want loving. You know, don't want not to be loved. Why can't we live a life of love in harmony and peace, equality? Understand the oneness in all life. What's it to you if I love you? What's it to you if I love you?
We want it now.
Freedom.
This is Radio Freedom live stream celebrating 20 years since the Derby Rock House closed.
Well, I've got to say a very good evening to you. I'm Paul. I ran the Derby Rock House from the very beginning. And tonight it's Saturday, the 1st of May 2021. We're celebrating 20 years since the Derby Rock House and the Future Club closed. And we're going to be playing, DJs will be coming along playing their favourite tunes from the Derby Rock House. And as the night progresses, we'll have recordings from a screen reader, which is a bit unfortunate, but it has to be a screen reader, which recounts my memories of when the club was set up, when it was open, and all the things I could remember in 2007 when I wrote it. A lot of the things that are in it, some people may not agree with, but that's how it was, that's how I remembered it. And I'll try and remember some of the stories and things that sort of came up as we did the Future and the Rock House. So we've got guest DJs coming up. I'll give you more information as the night progresses. What's going to happen is we'll be playing excerpts from the book thing that I wrote a few years ago. They're only about 3 minutes long, so whilst it's rather tedious, you think it's only going to go on for 3 minutes, and you hear a few chapters of it, and that will be available for you to read in full from the radiofreedom.co.uk website. So we're just going to give you a few sort of highlights of what was actually what I wrote in 2007. So we're looking back at the Rock House, and one of the first pieces of music that was played in that building when we arrived, that's myself, Paul, Clive Buxton, Chris Shaw, Stuart Chambers and Sally Chambers and Steve Bancroft and Kev Oldsworth and Richard Young and Della Day. We got the keys to that building, well I did, and showed everybody the place. The first thing we did was we put a mini sound system in there that we're going to use while we're doing the place up. And Kate Buxton had this CD, it was a tape, it was a good old fashioned tape. And on it was a number of tunes, but the very first thing, I think, that we played in that building was Neil Young After the Gold Rush, and that's coming up in a minute. And then what we'll do is we'll go into the first sort of screen reading of the 17th of March 1984, which is the opening night, and we'll actually play the very first tunes that was heard by anybody as they walked into the club. And we've actually got the opening sequence, so we'll play that in a bit. So first it's Neil Young, and this is After the Gold Rush.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. I was lying in a burned out basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about said hoping it was a lie.
After the Gold Rush. That was the first thing we played in the Rock House when we were doing the place up.
This is Radio Freedom live stream celebrating 20 years since the Derby Rock House closed.
Saturday the 17th of March 1984. I got up early and went to the club for the first time as manager. I had a word with old Cleo's staff to see if any wanted to work for me. I had a lady called Wendy and a doorman called Alan Millwood. The DJ John Pountain had worked at Cleo's on London Road and was well known in Derby. The company Sigma Sound Enterprises of Nottingham were still working on the lights that day, but the sound system was operational. It was a 3KW studio master and four Fro cabinets suspended from the ceiling joists above the dance floor. My bar manager Wendy told me that I needed some change for the bar. Problem, all the banks were closed, so I had to go round town in the afternoon buying things for 10 and 20 pound notes. I remember buying about 15 Derby Telegraph newspapers that day. My sister Isabel agreed to help with the bar because I had not a clue about bars. On the Saturday evening, things were getting tense. The lighting people had not finished the job. Only two lights were operational. But the club looked nice with its new carpet and seated area. Everything looked new. Tempers were getting frayed as there was only an hour to go and there was a huge crowd outside the club. The lighting company walked out, leaving us with no power and no lights. My friend Clive strapped out the phase that was not working in the old 1930s fuse box outside the gents' box. After a massive bang and sparks everywhere, we had power and were set to open. I said that the first thing that the customers coming in should hear was Radio Caroline's Loving Awareness, which I think was made from a Beatles record. Then The Who and Barbara O'Reilly at full volume, 3000 watts. New customers ran into the place greeting Alan Millwood like he was an old friend. They could tell that this was going to be new era in Derby because I had got one thing right: the sound was shit hot. Within about half an hour, we had hit the capacity figure of 300, yet the place looked empty. It's at this point where I played roulette with public safety for the first time. We let a further 500 in, then turned the rest away. The place was rammed. It was my first night in charge and I had already broken two rules: one, oversubscribing the venue, and two, letting non-members in. During that night we had two power failures. We ran out of change and ended up giving most of the beer away. The sound went off three times. Amps were overheating and shutting down due to thermal protection. The makeshift staff worked well, but I knew I had to advertise properly and make a team. It was an amazing night, the first of many. Being a biker-type place made it different to anything in the area. I intended that it would be a club for the customers, a place they could call their own. After the night was over, I got a feeling of power and responsibility. I was to maintain this good feeling for nearly 20 years. At the end of the night, all the money was put in a red bucket, which I took home in my car. I left it at the side of my bed in my pokey little house on Brackens Lane, Elverston. On Sunday the 18th of March 1984, I got up and for the first time had that knackered feeling that would be ever present for many years. It took ages to get up and get the day started. I went to the club to clean up the mess. I had no cleaners. It took ages to clear up the sink and mop the toilets out. Oh my God, have I created a shit job for me? I can't do this. I hate it. I must get some cleaners. My friend Richard went out with Della. She was well fit. She said she would do the cleaning for me. That afternoon, I took the red bucket round to my friend's lodge to count the money. We had to sort out all the change and notes because it was mixed up. We laid the money out in £100 piles. His floor was awash with cash, 3,800 quid in all. I had been on the dole for 2 years and had a repossession order on my house, so it was amazing to see such a great wad of cash. I was able to start paying off my debt to those who had helped me set up the club.
So that's the first of tonight's screen reading, so you could say. I'm not very good at reading stuff out, so I decided to get a Windows screen reader to read it out. But there's going to be a few chapters from that as the night progresses. They're no longer than that, each chapter. And there's some good stories in there. For instance, there's one particular occasion where we're doing some work on the lighting rig, perhaps cleaning it or whatever. A claw hammer got left in the roof. And that claw hammer was there for 4 years. So when people were dancing on the dance floor, I think Paddy went up to change the gels on the lights and found a claw hammer hanging there from the ceiling. It had been there at least 4 years and people were dancing underneath it and they never knew it was there. Anyway, what I'm going to do now is play you the actual opening sequence that was played on the 17th of March 1984 at exactly 9 o'clock when we opened. And it's the Love and Awareness jingle, and then it's the Who, Babbo O'Reilly. This is the actual recording that people heard when they came in.
Thank you.
that's the very excellent Who and Baba O'Reilly. And before that, it was the Love and Awareness jingle used by Radio Caroline. And that was the first thing that was played as people came into the club on the 17th of March 1984. But not many people heard it. I doubt there's anybody listening actually heard that go out, because there was a queue at the bottom, and the doorman were letting people up the stairs, or Alan Millwood, letting people up the stairs slowly, and we'd never done it before, and the cash desk, can't remember who was on the cash desk that night, but the first few people that ran into the place will have heard the Who and Baba O'Reilly. So that was the how the club opened. Well, you're listening to a live stream. It's on radiofreedom.co.uk. We're going out from Derby, and as the night progresses, I'm going to be here for about an hour and a half maybe. And then after me, Dudley Dave, Dreddy Dave, will be here, and he's going to play some music from the Confusion night that he used to run, and recount some stories from when he was at the club. And then Splodge will be here with some more rock. And then at about 11 o'clock-ish, we've got a recording of the last night of the Rock House, or Future Club as it was then. But we've actually got the recording, because it went out on a fictitious sort of pirate radio station that we did. We didn't call it Radio Freedom, because we'd had a licence for Freedom, and we didn't want to, like, ruin the name or give it a bad name, really, because we hadn't got a licence to do the broadcast. So what we did, allegedly, we did a pirate station. We changed the name to Force FM, and it went out on 107.3, I think it was, or 107.7. On the last night, and we hung a microphone from the DJ box so that we could really capture how, you know, what the crowd were what they sounded like on the last night. And there's the bit where I go onto the stage and start gobbing off and shouting and swearing and things, but that's how it was. So we've got the actual last night, which will be going out at about maybe 11 o'clock. One thing we did, there was always this major conflict between, as the years went on, between the rock music and the emerging dance scene, which sort of came about in the 1990s, just at the time when rock music was sort of diminishing somewhat. So I tried to do the usual compromise, the balancing act of sort of doing rock and dance together, and we got Smokescreen. And what we did on the last night of the club was we ran a rock night until sort of 20 past one in the morning. And then everybody left the building, we cleared the place up, and we got ready for Smokescreen, who were around the corner, ready with their van to load in. And then we did an illegal all-night party that went from sort of 2 o'clock in the morning till half nine the following day. So it was a hell of a night, the last night. And we've got the recording of that, and also obviously the book that I wrote in 2007, which is a good job, really, because I've forgotten most of the stuff that happened. And you can get hold of that. You can read it for yourself, or get a screen reader to do it like we're doing tonight. And that's at radiofreedom.co.uk. And with any luck, there should be a link on there. So I'm Paul. I used to be the manager of the place. I set it up in the beginning. And I had 17 years of fun doing it. So we are remembering the Derby Rock House and the Future Club, which closed 20 years ago tonight. Well, actually on the 28th, but this is the nearest Saturday night to it. As it started off as a rock club, we're going to play some of the rock classics, the tunes that ran the dance floor. Here's Bon Jovi now, and this is Living on a Prayer. We'll be right back. That's Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer. That used to absolutely pack the dance floor out. Everybody used to leg it onto the dance floor as soon as that started. Although my version, of course, started very, very slowly and quietly. You listen to Radio Freedom. I'm Paul. I used to run the Derby Rock House and then the Future Club from 1984 to 2001. And I'm playing some of the top tunes that I can remember from the rock era, first of all. Next tune up, yeah, Rocky Reginald used to play it. Sunday Bloody Sunday. Surprising, really, some of these tunes. You wouldn't think these would pack the dance floor. This U2 tune certainly did.
Close my eyes and make it go away. How
This is Radio Freedom, live stream, celebrating 20 years since the Derby Rock House closed.
Thanks very much to Yaz for doing these voiceovers. You heard Sunday, Bloody Sunday, which Rockin' Reg used to play. Do you know, we couldn't get hold of Rockin' Reg to do as a programme for tonight, but you can find him. You know, if you go to the Pirate Radio Archive website and look for East Midlands, there's a Radio Freedom recording which was done from the club, and Rockin' Reginald is DJing on there. It's a recording off medium wave and it doesn't sound too good, but you can certainly hear it's Reg. There's a few people we couldn't really get hold of. We couldn't get hold of Brian. He used to DJ on a Saturday night during the rock nights, and there's a few people really that we've lost over the years, which is a great shame. We dedicate a lot to this to Kev Clancy and to Janet, who used to work behind the bar. These are some of the people we remember from the Derby Rock House days. We're going to move on now, playing a tune that we used to play whilst we was fitting the building out. I mentioned previously that my mates, Clive Buxton and Chris Shaw and Stuart Chambers, Steve Bancroft, helped us to fit the place out. They used to come in after work, so I used to get all the wood and everything from Harlow's, and then in the evening, they all had jobs. They'd come to the club and fit the place out. And one of the problems we had with the place was that the council said that the noise will be heard in the street and around the corner, you know, the old people's flats. So they said you've got to soundproof the building. So what we did was I made the mistake of misunderstanding how much we got to soundproof it. So I spent a load of cash ordering wood from Harlow's. We boarded up all the windows because that building had got windows all the way down Babington Lane and round the corner. All of them had to be boarded up. The council came and looked at it and said, no, we meant it should be bricked up with blocks, high density building blocks, not wood. So the whole lot had to be ripped out. Frantically, had to take the lot down and then order a load of high density building blocks. And we actually destroyed that building. All the windowsills just got, the blockwork got put over the timber windowsills. So you got high density building blocks sitting on the old windowsills, and they were tied in with like wall ties to hold them in. But we noticed the wooden windowsills were still visible, and you're not supposed to have brick on timber, but it's too late. We'd done it. So who's it? I can't remember the chap's name, but the builder just got his chisel and chiselled all the windowsills off and painted the whole lot black so he couldn't see. And then about 6 months later, after we was open, we noticed that these, like, must have been half a ton of blocks was all moving. It was loose. What had happened was the wall ties, because the blocks were so heavy, they were sitting on these wooden windowsills. So what we did was we had to order a load of massive planks and strengthen the, put huge builder's planks over the front to stop the block work coming out. But we managed to get away with it. This was the fun and games of trying to get the place open and keep it going when we hadn't really got the money to finance it properly. Anyway, we're going to play Rush now. This is a track called Tom Sawyer, and this is one of our favourites while we're setting up the place, while the building work was going on.
A Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride. We'll be right back.
That's Rush and Tom Sawyer. Just a reminder, you're listening to a review, really, of the Derby Rockhouse and the Future Club. It's the 20th anniversary since the Rockhouse closed. That's tonight. Well, this is the nearest Saturday, the 1st of May, 2021. People have said to me, you know, would the club have survived if we had like a coronavirus epidemic in the days of the club? Do you know, all the things that you thought about that would jeopardise the place and threaten it, nobody ever told me about anything like coronavirus or a global pandemic to affect trade. It was never mentioned. Nobody ever mentioned it at all. The only real thing was if there was trouble in the club and it got shut down, or you had problems with the lease because the building was rented. So that there's all those sort of issues and problems with the council. But never did anybody ever say, "Well, what if there's a global pandemic? How would you get around it?" So I don't think we would have lasted more than with the restrictions that I know that's going to happen when clubs open again. There's no way you can make any money with social distancing in a nightclub. No way. So I don't know how they're going to deal with that. Right now we're looking at playing some old rock tracks that I used to hear down there. Some of them I heard over and over again and got sick to death of them, but that's because I heard them most nights. But looking back at it, we lived in a very, very rich time in the 80s, 90s and early 2000s with nightclubs in the city. And I've tried to scribble down a list of them. Last time I did this, I got 13. I just tried it while that track was on. I know there's the Pink Coconut, Eclipse and the Blue Note and the Bless and Jimmy's, the Havana, the Union Bars, there's the Rock Island and Paradise, and I've like drawn a blank. But there used to be a lot more clubs than that. I think there were 13 nightclubs in Derby in the 1990s. The Rockhouse was one of the biggest. We were supposed to have 350 in absolute maximum. And we sometimes, you know, looking back on it, we shouldn't have done it, but we put about 700 in there. There was 800 people in on the opening night, and there's over 1,000 through the place on the last night. So it was, I've said in that piece in that book reading that it was a very dangerous thing to oversubscribe a venue. And it's one of the things looking back on, we're very lucky to get away with it. I will say that they weren't all in at the same time. Sometimes you could use the word throughput. But there was a time when there's 700 people in the club and the licensing justices and the magistrates came and inspected the club whilst it was actually open, but they couldn't get in because there's a queue outside because we had hit the capacity figure and we weren't letting anybody else in. So they had to wait in the queue like all the rest of the people with the one in and one out that was being managed by the door team. That was Stan, Deck, Izzy, Steve, just looking at the list, and Rich was on the door over the years. But yeah, the magistrates came in and they said, there's more than 300 in here. I says, oh no, there's not. They said, hey, very, very busy. I says, I can take you to the door, we can count the money. They said, no, that won't be necessary. So we got away with it. There's another time when we got inspected by the fire officer, but there's only about 30 people in, thank God. Anyway, we're moving on. This is Boston and this is More Than a Feeling.
I closed my eyes and I slipped away.
Boston with More Than a Feeling. You listen to a 20-year celebration since the Rock House and the Future Club closed on the 28th of April 2001. This is the nearest Saturday to it, and I'm playing some rock tunes, and we've got Dudley Dave in a bit and also Splodge, and then we're going to do a rerun of The Last Night of the Rock House. The whole thing was recorded, and we'll run that at about 11 o'clock. Now, another chapter from the book. This concerns bikers and how it was dealt with in the early days.
Biker shit. As I said previously, Derby had two motorbike gangs, the Ratus and the Lupus. My head door man was Alan Millwood. He was the head door man. He got me the massive safe, which I called Cyril Smith. Alan Millwood was old school doorman. He did not take any shit, but he was completely loyal, and he never questioned what he was asked to do. Working alongside him was Tim Thornhill and another chap whose name escapes me. They were both Ratus. They did not like Alan Millwood and wanted him gone, so that they could establish themselves as in charge of the door. This would have been very useful to fellow Ratus members, having them on the door. One slight problem: how to get rid of Mr. Millwood. An incident took place involving Alan Millwood. I think it may have involved a female customer. I can't exactly remember. The two other doormen asked me to get rid of him. I said no. 2 weeks later, and numbers at the club were falling, I was presented with a petition signed by 800 customers asking for Alan Millwood to be removed or they will boycott the club. This is where I had to think carefully, and it was the most pivotal of moments in the club's history. If handled wrong, it could have meant a gang takeover of the club. I realized that 800 customers was a serious amount and that they had to get their way. I decided to get rid of all the door staff in one fell swoop. I went to Alan's home to tell him to his face. I said that in my view he should stay, but we were losing trade. I told him that in view of the situation I would get rid of all the door staff and would not have anyone bike gang dominating my door. We shook hands. He said, "You are the first person to sack me in all my working life. I feel I was lucky to come out in one piece," but he had a brain and could see what I was aiming to do. Word spread that Alan Millwood had left. Numbers went up again. Problem. I had no door staff. Everyone was asking what I was going to do about it. I asked Harley Graham. He was a lupus. I said, "I can't have one group on the door." He gave me a phone number of someone called Izzy. Izzy lived in Burton upon Trent. I asked him if he would like to discuss the idea of managing my door and setting up an independent door team. He came up with Deck and Steve. Izzy was and is a straight talking down to earth chap who faces danger and gets on with the job. Deck was a boxer who was placed highly in the boxing scene. Steve was a tire fitting depot manager. This team were the hardest door in the city, but they were polite and we mannered, but when shit hit the fan they were excellent. Several ratters had a go, but our door held strong. Customers felt safe. I could relate to Deck because of his socialist values. It was the time of the miners' strike and Deck used to go and kick coppers on the picket line, so I respected him. We would often stand on the door talking about how we hated the police and the Thatcher government. I felt confident having these people around, and so did the customers. I often went to the door to give Deck a cup of tea to find him arguing about Marxism with someone. He always used to go on about Nostradamus' theory of the end of the world. He used to say it would start in the Middle East. I reckon he got that about right. I was never quite sure about Steve. I did not talk with him too much because he used to try to intimidate me a little. The doormen were told that they must never throw anyone down the stairs. If they did, they will walk that night. I would prepare their wages and they would be off, no questions. The club was getting stupidly busy. Splodge was finding it hard to deal with the dickheads on Friday, so he left. I asked Izzy if he knew a good DJ. He said, "Yeah, try Pete Lawrence." Pete was older than our customer base. He worked at a pet shop. Pete started work on Friday nights on the payroll. Unlike most of the staff. In those days, most people wanted the good old cash in hand. Pete Lawrence started up his disco night on Fridays. It was like a biker's wedding disco every week, but he was getting 550 every week. We still had a few bands to put on that we had booked before he started.
This is Radio Freedom, live stream, celebrating 20 years since the Derby Rock House closed.
Radio Freedom.
Love it.
Van Halen and Jump, and before that it was Aerosmith and Love in an Elevator. I'm going to play now one of the most massive tunes that ever got played down at the club. It was played most nights. It's The Cult and She Sells Sanctuary.
That dial.
This is Radio Freedom live stream.
Continuing with the massive tunes, this is Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Radio Freedom.
We'll be right back.
arrival of the 1990s. The club was open 3 nights a week, Tuesdays, Fridays and Saturdays. Friday was Pate Lawrence, which was a disco night interrupted by the vocational band. Saturday we had 3 DJs who worked in rotation. Paddy, Tiptoe Tony and Brian. Tuesdays was a free night of rock stuff with DJ Nick Smith. During this time I had been able to pay off my mortgage on my house in Alverston and was looking to buy more properties, rather like most working class people did when they came into a little cash. My girlfriend Liz was a student at the University of Derby. Her fellow students wanted to put on a party. I said they could have the club free but they must provide their own DJ. It was a Thursday night and they got 200 in, which was not bad. I was struck by the quality of the music played by the DJ Mark Leslie. He played Ziggy Stardust by Bauhaus. This sounded good and a departure from the usual rock shit that was being played. I approached him and stuck 5 quid in his hand. I said, I will give you 5 quid for every good tune you play. I think I ended up giving him 20 quid. I decided that with this DJ I could try and break into the student market, so I offered him a regular Monday night. This was undoubtedly a pivotal moment for the club. We had got the reputation of being a greasy biker venue where you would get stabbed. This was not true, but the media portrayed bikers in a bad light and we had to live with that. Mark Leslie started his Monday night. It was massive. We got 300 in first night. We gave the students cheap beer, loud music played by a student who they knew. I told Mark about the pirate radio we ran from the club. He thought this was good. He agreed to do a radio show calling himself Steve Wrong. It was on midday on Sundays. He played all the new indie bands. He did not like rockers, Police or Thatcher. On his radio show, he would find anti-police and Thatcher stories. He would publicize demonstrations and basically reflect the atmosphere of unease with the right-wing government we had at that time. Several of Mark's friends started working at the club behind the bar. We were now getting 600 punters in on a Monday night. It was by far the biggest student night in the city. The University of Derby Students' Union was run by Matt McGuinness. He was there from the days before it got university status. He had found himself a cushy number as president of the SU. He did not like the idea of students going to our student night and not his poxy events. He got a team of disciples working for him to remove our advertising. We used to put up a massive banner on 2 radio masts with guys opposite the uni every Monday. It was put up the night before and picked it up late Monday night. This banner suddenly started falling down. At the time, one of my barmen was an ex-solidagary who served in Northern Ireland. He told us he often had to stake out remote farmhouses for days on end and he would help us find out who was trashing our banner. He said he would dig himself into the stream nearby and wait for Matt McGuinness to arrive. At about 11:30 a minibus arrived and Matt McGuinness and Bill Redhead got out and cut through the guy ropes and removed the banner. We got a photo of this and contacted the police and the local paper. The Telegraph put a photo of the banner in with details of its theft. Ecole clearly read the advertising on it for the student night. This worked well because the police got it back. I was now making serious money with a club. This gave me a renewed confidence. I felt I was the king of Derby. Everyone was going to the club. It was busy every night, and all the students were listening to the pirate radio. I went to the bank and borrowed some cash to buy 2 more houses, both of which were on top of big hills in the town. I did ran the pirate radio from there, and when they got busted by the DTI I rented them out to staff and students. These were the glory days of my time at the club. I was respected all over Derby for what I was doing. The club was run in such a way that the staff kept out of the way and we let the punters get on with enjoying the night. Our door staff were polite, funny but rock hard. Our Monday night was now the biggest night of the week. Mark Leslie and his mate John Walker, who worked behind the bar, lived in one of my many houses in Derby. It was a big Victorian property on Breedon Hill Road. Also in the house was Kevin Clancy and my girlfriend's college friend Mark. My property portfolio was expanding. I got business development loans for two more houses, 111 Mill Hill Lane and 82 Thornywood Mount in Nottingham. Note all the houses were on Two of Hills in order to broadcast pirate radio from. We all had one thing in common at the club apart from Tess, we all hated Thatcher. It was the time of the poll tax riots and the Criminal Justice and Public Order Act. Some of my staff went on the poll tax demos in London and recounted their experience on the pirate radio station. The club was becoming more of a social institution than a rock club. I enjoyed every day because of the respect I had everywhere I went in Derby. Even my parents were coming round to the idea that opening a nightclub was good. My mum had wished I had stayed at Rolls-Royce in a machine shop working on a lathe because it was a safer, more secure future. I did become a little self-confident and arrogant during the mid-90s, but then I had good reason. Everything was going right for me. By taking on Mark Leslie, I had been able to reinvent the club and move into the student market just as the rock thing was dying.
You can read more of that if you go to radiofreedom.co.uk and click on the link. There's some more chapters there. In the 1990s, things got exciting with the arrival of DJ Dudley Dave and Will with the Confusion Night. Dudley Dave will be along in about half an hour with his reflections on the Rockhouse and the Future Club.
This is Radio Freedom Livestream.